Okay, you made it through the first day. We having fun? I don't know. First day isn't usually a whole lot of fun. Let me ask, how many people were sleepy today? Look at that. Isn't that comforting? You're not alone. Anyone restless? Okay. Aches in the body? Busy mind? You're doing great. You're right on schedule. I had a feeling, because that's what the first day is often like. Now, some of you might raise your hand if I said how many really enjoyed the day or were glad they're here. And that's possible too, but it's important to understand how this process works, that at the beginning there is a settling in that takes patience and kindness, as I've been saying, and just understanding that you're shifting from life in the fast lane to slowing down a lot. And when you do that, there's quite an adjustment that's called for. You're being asked to sit still, give up any entertainment except for the present moment, which often isn't so entertaining on the first day. Walk a certain way, eat mindfully, sleep in a bed that you're not used to. Being in this whole situation where there's so much structure, if this is your first retreat, you might look at that schedule and see sitting, walking, sitting, walking. Where's the break? Where's the fun? This is what I gave my vacation to. So if you have the question coming to your mind, what was I thinking when I first signed up for this? You probably aren't alone. And if you've been doing this for many times and experience of many retreats, then you know that this is just part of the package. That's what gets easier. Not that you don't have all of those initial challenges. It's just that you can be patient with the process because you know this is part of the way it works, and it's really worth it. And for most people, I think I might have said it earlier in the hall, it takes about 2 or 3 days to just land here, of being very patient, very kind, and just showing up as best you can and letting go of the report card, as I've said. So I want to talk tonight, and actually this will be the first of a two-part talk on the different qualities that this practice develops that the Buddha said lead to the highest freedom and happiness and awakening. And that is the list of the 7 factors of enlightenment, or the 7 factors of awakening. And I'm going to give the first part tonight. Jane is going to give the talk tomorrow, and then I'll continue with part 2. Keep you in a little suspense in a couple of days. Okay. How many people are familiar with this list, the 7 factors? Okay, a number of you. Good. And for those who aren't, for those who are, it's always good to remember why you're doing and what you're doing and how this works and gets cultivated. As I said last night, these teachings have lots of lists. I think I said it here. Have lots of lists, and this particular list is in the four foundations of mindfulness. The fourth foundation is mindfulness of the Dharma, and what it is a compilation of five different lists of how we can understand the teachings, understand what gets in the way, the five hindrances, understand how we can see ourselves, the five sense bases, the six sense bases and the five aggregates, understanding the Four Noble Truths, and this understanding of the seven factors of enlightenment. So the Buddha said, this is how the mind gets caught and how we get caught, and this is how it can be freed. And these are the different qualities that are needed to cultivate that freedom. And there are two different ways of thinking of this list. There might be more, but two that are kind of obvious. One is a list of how different qualities balance each other, and another is a linear kind of development, how one leads to a development of the next and the next and the next. Of course, it's not as neat as first you do one, then you develop the second, then that leads to the third, but there is a general movement in the direction of greater and greater development. I'll give you the full list so you're not wondering for two nights, and then we'll go into the first half, or a little bit more than the first half, tonight. So it starts with mindfulness, and then there are three what are called arousing factors that include investigation, energy or effort, and joy. And then there are three stilling factors that include calm, concentration, and equanimity. And so one can think of it as a list of balancing, in that mindfulness is the one that cultivates all of them, which is the good news. You don't have to necessarily think, okay, well, am I on number four, number five, or number two? Mindfulness will cultivate all of them. And they can also be developed consciously by inclining the mind, if you get a sense that something can be supportive for your practice. But the mindfulness cultivates all of them, and the arousing factors are balanced by the stilling factors. You heard me say a few times today, as far as the instructions, relaxed, interested kind awareness. And really, that interest and relaxation are another way of saying the arousing factors and the stilling, calming factors. So even if you just remember that, that's where you're bringing balance into your practice. And the kindness, that kind attitude, that kind awareness holds it all. Or is the heart quality that holds the whole process. So, let's see if there's something else I want to say. Come on. actually. Okay. So the first quality is that of mindfulness, which we've certainly spoken of so far and we'll keep on speaking of, because it is the way to awakening. As I quoted in the Satipatthana Sutta, there is one direct way to overcome sorrow, lamentation, and grief, despair, and realize the highest happiness, and that is mindfulness. Mindfulness is simply knowing what is happening in this moment without getting lost in your ideas about what you'd like to be happening, what you like to be different, what you want to hold on to just see clearly without judging your experience. It's very simple. One simple exercise that I find helpful to just show how mindfulness works, maybe so if you've been on retreats with us before, you maybe are familiar with this. You can do it again. Just put your hand out in front of you right now. And move it slowly back and forth. And as you're moving it slowly, you might close your eyes and put all your attention on feeling the movement. Right now, is there any worry in your mind? Any fear? Just feel the movement. Any wanting? Any yesterday or tomorrow? As you just feel the movement. Okay, you can open your eyes. That's it. Congratulations, you were just mindful. And in that moment, when you're just connected with your experience, one positive thing is that you're not lost in your stories that the mind is continually creating. Not that that's bad that the mind does that. The mind thinks, just like your eyes see, your ears hear, your mind thinks. And it's amazing that it does that. It's kind of like nature coming through us, nature which is continually creating. I mean, you have to work hard to stop nature as a shoot of grass emerges through some concrete. You know, you have to really work hard. Nature just loves to create. That's the force of the universe. And in us, we have these creative, conscious machines that just keep on both interpreting and also reflecting on reality, planning, remembering. That's how it works. So the mind isn't the enemy and thoughts aren't the enemy. Thoughts are amazing. This center was someone's thought. Let's create a retreat center. This retreat was someone's thought. Oh, let's have a retreat next July and invite Jane and James, you know. All of these things, your whole life is made up of thoughts. It's just that we're so easily seduced and lost in all the different thoughts that come our way. And so we have a happy thought and we get happy. It's great. We have a scary thought and we scare ourselves. Or a longing thought and all of a sudden the moment isn't good enough. Or an angry thought of something someone did to us 8 years ago, and we start getting angry. They really did do that, you know. So it's not that thoughts are bad, but if we just learn how to train ourselves and see what thoughts serve us and what thoughts don't, then we can choose our reality. And we don't have to get hooked by all the various thoughts that come through, like bait on hooks. Oh, catch me. Grab me. This is an important one. So there we are, sitting and just learning to be still and see all the thoughts coming and going and coming and going. And there we are. You're not doing much during the period. You're just sitting there. And the waterfall comes. And if you can learn to just be a spacious presence that sees, oh, look at the mind do its thing. Or that feels the breath and takes a break from noticing all of those thoughts, then you are doing something very radical that not many people realize until they look at their mind. As one of my teachers, Munindraji, used to say, if you want to understand the mind, sit and observe it. And that's what we're doing, along with trying to be present, because in the very act of trying to be present, you will see everything that gets in the way. So, moving your hand, and there's a sense of connection and balance where you don't need to add anything or take anything away. It's very restful. And that is the same whether you're feeling the breath, or hearing a sound, or feeling a sensation, or feeling an emotion, or a mood, or whatever. Oh, I can have a spacious presence for this too, and not need to get lost in my reactions. Mindfulness has a number of different lenses, and so it's good to understand that mindfulness can look different at different moments. Sometimes there's a zoom lens or a microscopic lens where you're noticing subtle aspects of experience. Sometimes there's a wider, more panoramic lens that notices the whole gestalt of the moment. Any moment of mindfulness is as good as any other moment. So this is something to bear in mind. It doesn't necessarily look how you think it should look. Moving your hand, feeling the fine sensations of the breath as it comes through the nostrils, or feeling a whole swirl of emotions, and you might have no idea what's going on if you realize, oh, confusion, that's what's happening. In that moment, you're mindful. You're clear. You might be clearly confused, but you're clear about it. Oh, confusion, that's what's going on. And that moment of mindfulness is just as liberating as noticing subtle sensations. And the Buddha said we can be mindful in all postures. We can be mindful of the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral flavor of experience. We can be mindful of all the thoughts and feelings and mind states and emotions. The fourth foundation is, as I mentioned before, we can be mindful of the hindrances or these factors of awakening. It doesn't matter. Any moment of mindfulness is liberating. So if you simply ask yourself, what's happening right now? That's the question. That's probably my primary practice question. Oh, what's happening right now? Oh, now there's awareness of this or this, whatever it is. Awareness doesn't care. It's a very profound line one of my colleagues, Carol Wilson, has said many times. Awareness doesn't care. It doesn't care what it's noticing. So that's a kind of relief to realize you don't have to fix the moment. Whatever is happening, I can guarantee you one thing, it's going to change anyway. So there's no need to hold on to make the moment happen. Just, oh, can I be with this moment? Mm. And every moment counts. Every moment is just as good as any other moment. Let's see if I have some. Mm. Oh, I didn't bring all of those quotes. Okay, we'll go over them. There's one thought going on. Mm-mm. It's not figuring anything out. You don't need to figure anything out, just to be with things as they are. That's it. And when you're here and you realize, even when you've been lost in thought, as soon as you realize you've been lost, you wake up. I want to share with you one quote that I did bring from that I write about in my book Awakening Joy. My dear friend and colleague Sylvia Borstein, she tells a story about how she saw how mindfulness can wake us up from confusion. And she says, she was talking about visiting a friend in New York City, and she'd arranged to meet a friend for a theater performance, and she decided to take a bus to get there. And as the bus crept along through heavy traffic, she started worrying, I'm going to be late, I'll miss the curtain, oh, my friend will worry about what happened to me, I shouldn't have taken the bus, the subway would have been so much faster. And then she figured she could walk faster than the bus. But as soon as she got off, of course, the bus passed her by. And she's thinking, oh, God, I should have taken a cab. So Sylvia has been meditating for many years, but she's also been fretting and worrying for even longer than that. So it was a reaction that she could easily fall into. So she continues her story, describes running down Broadway in high heels with a cold wind whipping around her. And then she describes, she all of a sudden has this thought, and she says to herself, oh, what am I doing? Oh, I'm grumbling. That's what's happening. That's a moment of mindfulness. Up until then, I was caught up in a habit-driven narrative, an editorial comment about what was happening. But the moment at which the mind says, oh, Sylvia, dear, you're grumbling now, the lens switches, and suddenly the truth of that moment is, I'm a 71-year-old woman running down Broadway in the middle of winter in high heels. That is really far out. That's an extremely fortunate thing to be able to do. It changed everything, and I felt proud and actually hoped a lot of people saw me. So in one moment, a different perspective instead of, having a meltdown, that's what's going on, or getting worried. And then there's awareness that knows, that sees, that's not wrapped up in the storyline. So this is the first and most profound of all the factors: mindfulness. The second factor is investigation. And investigation is a really wonderful, rich area to explore and to get in touch with. We have a natural curiosity that loves to learn. It's what we were born with. You know, you see something going on a little bit away from you, something's going, and there's this natural, what's going on around there? Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
That's because you want to know. There's something in you that wants to know. Isn't that wonderful? It didn't have to be that way. It could have just been, you know, ants doing their task. Now I'm doing this job, you know. But it's something that says, oh, I want to learn. I want to know more. I want to grow. And so we come into the world like this. One of my my favorite things, and I always share this on retreat, if I can remember, is a birthday card that I got many years ago that I've never given away. Actually, I have two of them. I saw there was a second one. I'll take that one too. And I've never sent it because I just love it so much every time I see it. And it's this baby on an infant, really, that has just pulled a booger out of his nose. And that's it's an English word that comes out of your nose. And there he is, fascinated. Wow. And you open up and it says, you always were easy to entertain. Happy birthday. We were born with that kind of natural curiosity and interest. And so this is something that we can use in our practice. We get so overstimulated that after a while we just think things need to be intense to be worthy of our attention. And that's one of the things that we're doing in this settling in period. We're kind of detoxing from stimulation, and instead of the intensity of the next hit, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, we get more and more subtle so that we start to tune in on a much softer level to reality. And once we start having a deepening awareness, things become much more interesting. At Spirit Rock, we have these lots of different animals around on the land, and one of the animal species are these little lizards. They're about so long, and they stop, and they are completely still, and then they zip somewhere else. People fall in love with these lizards. You know, when you're slowing down, and there's a lizard in front of you, all of a sudden, wow, what's going on there? Oh, I wonder what he's thinking. Does he like me? No. It takes some practice to get in touch with that curiosity when it's as subtle as, oh, let's feel this breath. What is this breath like? For me, sometimes I think of myself like an alien that's just dropped into this body on planet Earth, and I'm reporting back to the mothership, oh, this is what breathing is like for these guys, you know. Or imagining being a baby taking my first breaths. What is going on there anyway? Here, just imagine for a moment, close your eyes and imagine that you've just come through the birth canal and you're about to take your first breath. How present can you be? Here it is, first moment of your life. This is what's keeping you alive. Or the other end of the journey, imagine you're at the end of a very full life and you're about to take your last breath. How present can you be for that? The most important thing in the world, this moment of my life. Now let go of the past. Let go of the future. And just be with this breath, which has never been here before, which will never be here again. This is a moment of your life. Don't miss it. This is keeping you alive. Don't take it for granted. Just be interested. Wow, I'm alive. What's going on there? Okay, you can open your eyes if you'd like. Investigation. That's one of the things about mindfulness. Once you start paying attention, everything comes alive. And you don't take it for granted as we normally do. Wow, this is a moment of my life. We don't know how many moments we're going to have. Every one of us has a finite number of moments in this lifetime, and we don't know how many, but this is one of them. So why not be here for it and see what's going on instead of looking for some entertainment, other entertainment or distraction? So this is the investigation. And investigation doesn't mean analyzing. It's a tricky thing. Sometimes when people hear investigation, they think in terms of finding, of interpreting or figuring out why something is happening. Watch out for the word why in meditation. It can be a very dangerous word. Why am I feeling what I'm feeling now? You know, why do I always get stuck in this habit? Why almost always will spin the mind out if you're looking for an answer, the answer. But if you invite the why as a kind of invitation to just discover and explore and let go of the conclusion, but just letting yourself be curious and interested, life reveals itself to you in its own time. And so this requires patience. It requires letting go of your ideas and assumptions and seeing something fresh, as if you've never seen it before, like Suzuki Roshi in his wonderful book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He says, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. Be a beginner. Enter this moment as if you've never been here for it before, which you haven't. You haven't been for this one. So this is this investigation. And the interesting thing is, at the beginning, it takes some intention to show up for the subtleties. But the more you are interested enough to pay attention, the mindfulness grows, and the more it strengthens, the more you see. And the more you see, the more interesting everything becomes. So this is where, at the beginning, it takes a lot of intention to be here, as one Tibetan teacher called it. It feels like a bit at the beginning like manual labor, you know. Oh, bring myself back to the moment. Oh, I've got to bring myself back to the moment. But as you keep on doing that and see, oh wow, let's be here for my life, and the mindfulness gets stronger, this is the coolest place to be. There's a whole show going on here. And so the interest, another way of saying investigation is interest. The interest and the curiosity keeps you here, and as the mindfulness gets stronger, everything becomes more and more interesting. So, mindfulness, which in it has this sense of interest and wonder, and that then leads to the next factor of awakening, which is energy or effort. There's no getting around the fact that it takes effort and energy to be here for your experience, because it's so easy to get distracted and lost. And so to see that, to understand a bit about effort and energy is really helpful. It's not about plowing your way through and being a samurai warrior. Sometimes samurai warriorship can be helpful, but after a while it gets exhausting and you burn yourself out. It's about finding a balance of effort. Not too strenuous, where you become tight, not too lax, where you're laid back. You know, I said a number of times, oh, relaxed awareness. Relaxed doesn't mean lazy. They're very different. You need to have a kind of wholeheartedness, intention to be here, but not an overstrenuous effort. It needs to be very balanced. And there's a classical example in the time of the Buddha where there's one monk who was really trying hard. He was so zealous in his practice, but he was getting more and more wound up in knots. And it really wasn't working. And he went to the Buddha and he says, you know, I'm just, it's not working. It's very frustrating. I'm trying so hard. And the Buddha recalled, he said, weren't you a musician before you took robes? And the man said, oh yeah, I was. And he said, what instrument did you play? And he said, I played the lute. And the Buddha said, well, what happened when you tuned the strings too tight? He said, oh, didn't get the right note, too high. What happened when you tune them too loose? Not the right note, too low. He says, in just the same way, it's with our practice. You don't want to get too tight, and you don't want to get too lax, too loose. You need to find just the right amount of energy to put into your practice. That's where the relaxation comes along with the interest. So if you find yourself, either your body or your mind, getting contracted, this is a sign, oh, I need to lighten up a bit. And if you find yourself kind of getting laid back, well, if I'm mindful, I'm mindful. If I'm not, whatever, it's cool. it won't happen. It takes being present and bringing yourself back whenever you've gone. That's where the effort is. Not in trying to make anything happen, you know, like I said in an earlier sitting today, let go of the agenda. You're not trying to make anything happen. All you need to do is have the intention to be here as best you can, and when you've gone, the willingness to bring yourself back. That's the effort. That's the simple intention to be here as best you can, and when you see you've gone, to come on back. And there's all kinds of different messages that we get about effort. Some, I've been with some teachers that have said, heroic effort, turn up the jets. You know, if your leg feels like it's falling off, just note it, falling off, falling off, falling off, you know. Don't give up. And then I've been with other masters who say, simple and easy, Menindraji used to say, simple and easy, empty phenomena rolling on, you know. Or a great Tibetan who says, happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already here in relaxation and letting go. The great Dzogchen master. They tell you that, by the way, after you've done 100,000 prostrations and 100,000 mantra recitations and visualizations. Then they say, just relax. Okay, you know. They're both true and they both have their value, but you have to check for yourself what is called for in the moment. Am I getting too tight? Ah, I need to bring some ease and balance to my practice. Maybe I need to go for a walk. Maybe I need to go for a cup of tea. Maybe I need to go for a swim. You know, I think this is, you know, 3-4 walks might be a little bit too much this afternoon. Okay, maybe I need to come back here and really pay attention. So you have to be honest with yourself and just find that right balance. I'll tell you a story that comes to my mind on one retreat many years ago when I was sitting in at the 3-month course in Massachusetts. And in my earlier days, I was a kind of warrior, just I was going to do it. But I really loved going slowly and just being as diligent as possible. But at one point, I just carried it a bit too much. And I was crawling around the meditation center. Just would take me like 45. My walking period was going from sitting to then going to the toilet and then going back. It would take about 45 minutes, you know, just really good, you know. And it was neat up to a point, but at some point I started getting tighter and tighter and more inward. I didn't realize it at first, but it kind of snuck up on me. And then I realized, oh, I haven't been outside. It was snowy New England. I hadn't been outside for like 3 weeks, and I was just crawling around. And I said, there's something a little off here. I'm going to play hooky. Do you have that expression? Playing hooky, cutting school. I'm going to take off. And I'm not going to do the practice. I was so excited because I was going to be a bad boy, mischievous. And I put on my boots and my overcoat and all, and I was going to take an unmindful walk. That was my goal. You know, I am not going to be mindful. I've had enough of this for at least for now. So I started walking fast. I hadn't been in that speed for quite some time. It was amazing. Left, right, left, right. Hearing, sniffling, left, right. Thinking, left, right. I couldn't turn it off. It was the most mindful I had been in the previous 2 weeks. But what I needed was to just lighten up and get some space and not try so hard. So there's both ends of the spectrum. If you're a type A personality, lighten up. If you're a laid-back personality, rev up the intention. And then keep on monitoring, what do I need right now, like we said earlier? What do I really need right now to show up? There's no right or wrong, it's just really listening to yourself. One of the things about effort to keep in mind is it can be so easy to equate our effort with what our practice looks like. Oh, I'm really clear now. I must be doing it right. Oh, I'm really all over the map now. My effort must be off. Oh, I've got so many emotions now. I must be, you know, lost in my emotions. Or sometimes it's, oh, I don't have any emotions. I'm just flat and it's not working. I remember one retreat I went on. It was one of my first retreats. Everybody around me was going through boxes of Kleenex, right? And I was just sitting there watching my breath, you know, in, out. And I was thinking, I don't know if I'm getting this. And I went to Joseph, my teacher. I said, you know, everybody seems to be going through such rich experience. And I'm just sitting here feeling my breath, you know. Am I missing out? And he said, don't go looking for trouble. It will find you soon enough. You know? Which, you know, it did. But you can have all kinds of ideas of what really good practice should look like. Let go of them. You might be going through a tremendous storm or fear or confusion or your mind slipping off the object. And it sometimes can be a signal of very deep practice. Or you might be feeling really clear and present, and your mind says, hey, I'm really doing it now. And you've just identified with your experience and got caught in ownership. Let go of thinking you know what it's supposed to look like. Rather than evaluating your effort by what is going on in your practice, the guideline that I use is sincerity. My sincerity of practice. My sincerity of showing up as best I can. Which might look very different from day to day or hour to hour. You know, like I asked you last night to get in touch with what it is that calls you. Why did you come here? There's something really deep in there. And to stay connected with it and to let that be the place that your practice comes from. Not evaluating by what it looks like on the outside. So that effort is just the effort to be mindful. And one other thing about effort that I find really helpful. What's going on there? One thing that I find really comforting, you have no control over how mindful you are in any one moment. You have no control over how mindful or concentrated you are. You have input. You have that sincerity and that willingness, but in any one moment, you might be giving your whole heart to it, but your mind might be someplace else. And so to let go of thinking that you should have more control over your experience, and it's so freeing to realize, I don't have to make this happen. I don't have to have some kind of a gold star for my practice. Let go of the control that you never had in the first place, and just put your heart into being here as best you can. That's it. The effort to be mindful. So mindfulness leading to a curiosity investigation, what's happening right now, leading to the effort to be present, and out of that starts to develop what's called a keen interest in the objects or your experience, which is the fourth factor of awakening. Joy. Joy is a factor of enlightenment. And probably you're aware, I wrote a book called Awakening Joy. And I wrote it because I saw that I, like many people, can get very serious about practice. And you might think that this is about really doing it right. Remember I said earlier today, grimness, this is not about cultivating grimness. Joy is a factor of enlightenment, and where it comes from is when you get very interested in the moment, when you get very interested in the breath or sensation or whatever it is, at some point, everything comes alive and you have what's called piti. Sometimes it's translated as rapture or bliss when that momentum of mindfulness builds. And it's very exhilarating, alive, inspiring. You don't have much control over it. But when it's here, it gives a lot of energy to your practice. And so this is a natural kind of a thing that arises. And it comes from just throwing yourself into the moment. You can't say, come on, turn up the joy jets, you know. Where's the joy? As soon as there's any kind of grasping or wanting, it's guaranteed to cut off any opening. Where it comes from, here's the secret, is cultivating that interest and that energy and just throwing yourself into the moment. Wow. You know, like that little birthday card. Wow. You know that feeling when something is so compelling, when it's just really grabbed you and you're fascinated? That's what this is about. But you can't force fascination. It just comes from really letting yourself wholeheartedly give to the moment. I'll read a passage about joy from Ajahn Sumedho, who's a wonderful meditation master, Western Theravadan master. He says, sometimes in Theravada Buddhism, that's the Buddhism, the way of the elders, where the Pali canon and the oldest teachings, the teachings of the Buddha have been preserved in Theravada Buddhism. Sometimes that's where, in Sri Lanka and Burma and Thailand particularly, is where Theravada Buddhism is strongest. Sometimes in Theravada Buddhism, one gets the impression that you shouldn't enjoy beauty. If you see a beautiful flower, you should contemplate its decay. Or if you see a beautiful woman, you should contemplate her as a rotting corpse. This has a certain value on one level, but it's not a fixed position to take. It's not that we should just feel compelled to reject beauty and dwell on its impermanence and on how it changes to being not so beautiful and then downright repulsive. That's a good reflection on anicca, dukkha, and anatta, on impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and the selfless nature of reality. But it can leave the impression that beauty is only to be reflected on in terms of these three characteristics rather than in terms of the experience of beauty. People who can't see the beauty of the good or the true are really bitter and mean. They live in an ugly realm where there's no rejoicing in beauty and goodness and truth. But once you have true insight, then you enjoy and delight in the beauty and the goodness of things. Because truth, beauty, and goodness delight us. In them we find joy. So joy is a factor of enlightenment, and it's also something that we can consciously cultivate, not by trying hard. You know, I teach awakening joy and people take this course and sometimes they say, I'm trying really hard to be joyful and it's just not working. You can't try hard to be joyful, but here's the little trick. I'll give you the secret teachings of awakening joy. When you're in the middle of a wholesome moment, when your heart is touched, when there's a feeling of well-being, don't miss it. Don't miss it. Here it is, grace coming to give you a gift. Instead of, I hope this doesn't go away, or how do I make it even longer? Or how do I keep it here? As soon as you get into that kind of thought, you've just lost it. But rather, this is such a sweet moment. Oh, I feel so connected now. It feels so good. Ah, let it really register for you. So this is a little extra credit assignment with your meditation practice. It's not only about opening up to suffering and learning how to work with it. It's about not missing all the wholesome states. This is what the Buddha was talking about. This is what these seven factors of enlightenment are. They're wholesome states that the Buddha said arise naturally from the practice and we can incline the mind that way, not with grasping, but we can invite it. Oh, let's turn up the interest. Let's see. Let's be curious. Oh, let's find a balance of energy. Oh, let's really be here for this sweet moment. Or let's be here for any moment, mindfulness itself. So it's good to keep in mind that that's what you're cultivating, whether you realize it or not. It's naturally cultivated in every moment that you're truly mindful, that you're here without grasping, without pushing away, but being very present in a relaxed and interested, kind attitude towards your experience. Every moment of mindfulness counts. Every moment of mindfulness is weakening greed, hatred, and delusion, and is strengthening generosity, kindness, and wisdom. So said the Buddha, and he said, check it out for yourself. As I've checked it out, it seems to be right on. So isn't that neat? All you have to do is just be present in this moment. That's it. And all of these awakening factors naturally unfold. Okay. Part one. So let's sit for a few moments and just let the words settle. Just let yourself rest and open up to this moment. Honor it with your presence. Thank you for your kind attention.